This week on The Droids, the premiere of The Book of Boba Fett. We're back after our hiatus, and we're talking about the latest Disney Plus streaming series from Star Wars, The Book of Boba Fett. We're going to get into all of it and talk about this entire episode and where we think the series is going. All that and more on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids. You're looking for a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Ryan, I am Mike. And Ryan, it's been a while since we've had a chance to talk about Star Wars, but an occasion like a new streaming series brought us all back. And we already gave our predictions and our thoughts on what this series would be a while back, so we had a little bit of downtime. And now here we are, weekly, ready to go, talking about Book of Boba Fett. I think this is going to give us a lot to dig into each week. I have no doubt that we will have a lot and be ready and willing to talk endlessly about this new series. But Ryan, how have you been? How's Star Wars been to you over this last month? Life Day, did you celebrate it? What'd you do?
Well, first off, it's good to talk to you, Mike, as always. Apologies to the droids heads. We've said this before, the holidays are tough, schedules are hard, you know, people have kids and stuff, not me, but some people have kids. So, you know, we said before this, we got to get an episode out for the people. The people need. So, first off, a happy holidays to the people. Happy upcoming new year. And, you know, I've been good. You know, it's a new Star Wars. Star Wars has been treating me well. It was the fourth anniversary of The Last Jedi a few weeks ago.
How did you mark the occasion?
I watched The Last Jedi.
Okay.
And I thought about, I reflected, Auld Lang Syne, as the song goes, Mike. I reflected on times gone by. I thought about our 1 a.m. record after The Last Jedi, our excitement about that movie. And how to me it is just an endless chest of wonders, that movie. Watching it 4 years later, it's even better than I remembered it. And then, you know, it reignites the fire in me of anger that people just really got mad about it, and that bummed me out because I think it's such a beautiful film.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. I marked it by wearing my Directed by Rian Johnson shirt. I've recently rewatched The Last Jedi. It's, as we've talked at length and reiterated on this podcast, it being a full meal, there's a lot of time that I'm like, I want to watch it. I'd actually want to watch it every weekend if I could, because I enjoy it that much. But I don't want to diminish it in any way. I don't want it to feel overly familiar. And it does, even though, because I'm sure I've watched it. I mean, my Letterboxd would tell me I've watched it only four times. I think I've watched it at least seven. I'd be surprised if it was anything less than seven. And I don't know why I didn't track it every time on Letterboxd. I should have. That's the point.
That is interesting, though, because, like, to me, I'll watch The Force Awakens, you know, however many times. But I do kind of save The Last Jedi for special occasions.
Exactly. You know? Ones where I'm actually going to be focused on it and watching it intently.
I save it for, like, when it's my wedding anniversary. I say Last Jedi time. When it's, big events. My wife's birthday. Last Jedi time.
Was your wedding similar in it had that moment of, you know, join me and then you had the please? Was that part of it?
I did have to plead a little. yes.
There was an explosion. in the background?
In the background. So it was, there are a lot of parallels. There are a lot of parallels. I was told at my wedding that I'm nobody. You're nobody.
You know, it really does have a very fitting story of a wedding for anybody who watches The Last Jedi. When you put it under that lens, it makes a lot of sense.
You're nobody, but not to me. You're nobody.
Really, it's all that matters. All you need is someone else. I hearken back to Lost a lot. And to me, when I watched Lost, the season two finale, where Desmond is reading the letter from Penny that he found in the book, where all that you need is someone else in this world who loves you. And I think it's more than that. I might be paraphrasing. There's more to the letter than that. But there's a moment where and someone in this world who really loves you, and you have that, is what she says. And to me, I was like, that's all you need. That's it. And that's what Kylo needed. That's all he really needed, right?
Yeah. And
where was his penny? It was right in front of him. It was Rey, but he couldn't figure it out.
My favorite part of that movie is when Finn writes on his hand, not Penny's boat.
Shouldn't it be, let's see, something like DJ was lying on his hand?
DJ was lying. Yeah. Yeah, that was a slight spoiler for Lost Season 4. So if you haven't caught up.
Lost Season 3 finale.
There you go. Finale. Okay.
I might have watched each of those seasons. With the exception of Season 6, I've watched each of them at least two times, if not three. It's an all-timer for me, but no surprise there. Sure. Any other Lost heads out there, feel free to write in droidspod@gmail.com. Follow us on social media, Twitter, droidspod, Facebook, droidspod, Instagram, droidspod. We're going to get a little more active. We've been a little dormant, but we feel like we're going to get some stuff out there as well.
That's our resolution this year.
It is a droid resolution and a droid guarantee. Mm-hmm. So we are on the verge of talking about episode one of Book of Boba Fett. Before we do that, before we get into it.
Great tease. We're right on the precipice of talking about it.
We are. I hope we're going to hold on to you for the next 5 to 10 minutes before we talk about it. I wanted to ask all the droids, but we just have the two of us here. So, Ryan, I think we can probably bring this up when Sam and Chris are back on. Tell me about your first recollections of the character of Boba Fett and what the character meant to you before anything else. Before, you know, it became, it seems like in the last few years, even before this series, you know, last 10, 15, 20 years, I don't recall that most of us, and maybe this is my experience, that like Boba Fett was one of the prevailing things that you learned about Star Wars when you first saw Star Wars. Yeah. It felt like as time went on, it became this bigger thing. And this is definitely generational, because different generations experienced it where maybe they came into Star Wars and they'd already heard about Boba Fett and they were told about Boba Fett. And, you know, it became this big thing. Boba Fett. Where?
Right.
But for a lot of people who maybe grew up with the original trilogy and watched it in the 70s and the 80s and then watched it in the 90s when there wasn't new Star Wars, Boba Fett was part of all of Star Wars. It wasn't it didn't feel like, and I'm sure there was, I'm sure there were fan groups and huge things going on for Boba Fett and even at that time. But for me, my experience was not necessarily like Boba Fett in his own, oh yeah, I'm all about Boba Fett. I loved all of Star Wars. That's maybe jumping a little bit ahead to where how I feel about it. But just tell me about, you know, your earliest recollections of the character and what you found intriguing about the character.
That's a great question because, okay,
and
so
it can be. Hey, I wasn't intrigued. I'm not like
that,
the rest of
that is kind of that. It's so funny because before this, you said you wanted to start on a positive, and I'm about to be like, it didn't like. So my main recollection, and I've spoken about this moment before on the podcast, but you know, the obviously Empire Strikes Back is when we first kind of see him.
Yep.
Unless
you watch the special editions is your first. Yeah. Barring the Christmas special, and if your first introduction to Star Wars was the special editions.
Right, which it was not for me. So the thing that I remember him the most from is that like very visceral like the carbonite scene. Mm-hmm. You know, like I know before that there's the no disintegrations part, but he's more present in the carbonite scene, and so that was like a real imprint on me because I find that scene so, as a child I found that like extremely haunting.
Yeah.
Kind of the inevitability of something horrible happening, but so I've never been a big like Boba Fett head. I've never been a big Fett head. It's so funny because we were watching it the episode the other day, and my wife was like, "So why are people so into Boba Fett? Like, what is it? And like, where did that come from?" And I was like, "Honestly, like, he looks really cool. Like, that's where it originally came from. I'm not saying that that's why people are into him now. Obviously, there's been this long history with him. But at first, it was just that it was a really great design. It was just a really great character design. So it certainly had an impression on me. I was never someone who was super taken with Boba Fett,
mm-hmm.
Which will kind of, you know, color my reaction to all of this. But I'm very interested in your side of this.
Well, it's funny, though. I felt like you should have directly quoted Die Hard 4, is it? The one with Justin Long, where Kevin Smith turns to Bruce Willis and says, "Oh, you a fan of the Fett?" I feel like that would have been pretty appropriate. You dropped that.
Yes, it was. I believe it's Live Free or Die Hard.
That's the one,
right? Yeah, I do. It was a missed opportunity because I am quoting that movie constantly.
Timothy Oliphant. Let's bring it all back. Yeah,
right. Yeah, because of course Timothy Oliphant. I love that scene with, I believe Kevin Smith's character's name is the Warlock.
Yes, that is accurate.
Yeah, wow.
May have put it on in the background while moving in the last year and a half. That's, I think, why.
I make fun. It's not a bad movie. Yeah.
It's better than, I think, what was the next Die Hard after that? I don't remember.
Have there been two since then?
Have there been two?
I know there that one be. Of them is A Good Day to Die Hard.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think one of them I've wiped from my brain because it just felt so...
Right.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Die Hard cast. Sam would be so upset that we're talking Die Hard without him.
Oh, boy.
So,
for those of you who don't know Dan, we'll get him on the pod and we'll talk Die Hard. So, my reaction was, as I said, initially, all of Star Wars was Star Wars to me. And so I loved Boba Fett because it represented Star Wars. So when I would see people wearing a Boba Fett shirt, I'd be like, yes, Star Wars, absolutely. And I loved the design because it was like a lot of the rest of the design in Star Wars, whether it was Darth Vader, whether it was the Stormtrooper helmets, whether it was anything that Ralph McQuarrie had done. I loved all of that. And so that just felt
all part of it.
Yeah, it's
iconic. I mean, it's instantly iconic, yeah.
Yeah, and so to me, again, I kind of connected to it. And the color scheme is fantastic. But the things that I liked about Boba Fett, when at first he was menacing, terrifying, methodical, seemed to have one purpose, and his entire purpose was based on, you know, the bounty that he was after, and that's all that mattered. We didn't need to know anything else about him because he was going to do anything because he was cunning and considered, it felt like, the best of the best, even though I don't know if that's ever said in Star Wars.
In the original trilogy, there's nearly no... There's nothing to imply that. You know what
I mean? But yet that became headcanon, right?
Of course. But it's like if you look at just the canon of the original trilogy, and I'm not saying that that is canon because there obviously is the extended everything. So I'm not being dismissive or exclusive to other things. But if someone had only seen those three movies, you would assume that he was in the right place at the right time when it comes to Bespin, and then he's not that great at his job in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, exactly.
That's about it. But then obviously people were very taken with the character, and then there were, you know, it was proven otherwise.
I do feel like it appealed to me as time went on because I was definitely at a stage in my life where I was like, okay, this is the part of Star Wars that most people would say is cool. You know, it feels cool to like Boba Fett. It feels cool enough that if I represent Boba Fett on a shirt or in my collection, I'm going to be less likely to be ridiculed. If I came out and said, hey, Bib Fortuna is actually my favorite, maybe I'd be taken. Or Ewoks, even if you wanted to talk about the Ewoks. You know, Boba Fett was the one thing you could feel like, oh, yeah, that's the dude hardcore thing for you to like.
Right.
Because he is ruthless and he's an assassin and that's awesome and that's what men like. Make sure that, you know, everyone knows you're a man and you like manly things.
Yeah, you like Mandalorians.
Mandalorians, but he's not even a Mandalorian, which is actually interesting. I saw some reactions being like, boy, wow, I can't believe they didn't have him wear his helmet throughout this because that's what a Mandalorian does. I'm like, he's not a Mandalorian. That's the basis. Aside from all of that, I think as it went on, you know, to me, I kind of gravitated even more because I just felt like there became more cool things that you could see with Boba Fett. And then I just started paying more attention in my rewatches where I loved like the slow pace of his surveying of a situation or the nod that he does when he sees, who is it? Does he see Lando in disguise? No, it's when he sees Leia in her disguise in Return of the Jedi, where after the thermal detonator, where she pulls the fake, he gives her like a slow, respectful nod.
Right.
But, you know, I just kind of like that aspect of the character. And, you know, it's interesting because episode one of Book of Boba Fett plays into the idea of respect. Mm-hmm. But in it, in no way, and what I really enjoyed about it, and this is a little bit heading into Book of Boba Fett, but what I really enjoyed about him as a character was I'm like, no, no, this, I know he's bad, and I know what he's trying to do, and he's a bad guy. And like Darth Vader, you came forward, and it was very clear that this character was meant to be bad. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to learn more about him that finds me to be, have, find begrudging respect as he does some bad things, but maybe with a heart of gold. So that's my take from before. And now I think that kind of sets us up for episode one.
Yeah.
We've seen Boba Fett already in The Mandalorian. What was that? Episode six, episode seven of season two.
Yeah. Well, they tease him earlier, but then he like really,
yeah, we see him without his helmet.
Shows up in Robert Rodriguez's episode where Baby Yoda's sitting on that rock.
Yeah, they tease him in episode, or actually in season one, when it's the spurs that are coming across Fennec Shand.
Right, yes.
Boba Fett wearing spurs was never a thing I recalled from the original trilogy, but the choice they made felt very Western-y. Star Wars is Western,
Of course.
And this, the first, I think we all kind of had mixed feelings about the appearance in The Mandalorian. None of us really thought we were on our way to a Book of Boba Fett or a Boba Fett series after that.
Right.
But it was a lot of just violence, just pure, pure violence, and seeing some cool things. And actually, I do want to take one step back. I should have mentioned, I did have a lot of fun playing with my Boba Fett action figure. And it was a cool thing to have in the collection of everything I had from the Power of the Force collection.
Sure.
When I got that in the 90s. So, which I think is relevant because we all know that basically everybody who's involved in The Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett, they just want to be doing what they were doing when they were playing with their toys. And now they're just bringing it to a series, with the exception of Filoni, who's doing, you know, also storytelling and what he's trying to do.
Right.
But when we see Boba Fett in The Mandalorian, it's just pure action, smash him, anger, violence, and a lot of different ways for him to kill people and kill stormtroopers. So we all kind of felt a little bit mixed on that. That maybe not necessary to even bring him back to have that moment, let alone now to have a series. So we pick up in this episode where we learn a little bit more about him coming out of the Sarlacc pit, how he escaped, and then how he got to the point that he is now, taking over for Jabba the Hutt, which we saw, well, Bib Fortuna, who had taken over for Jabba the Hutt,
right,
which we saw at the end of the post-credit scene from season two of The Mandalorian, was him taking the throne in Tatooine. And now this is kind of his first introduction, as well as flashbacks to how he got there. And Ryan, I mean, parts of this were intriguing. We got some flashbacks to Kamino, got some flashbacks to when Jango Fett was killed in Attack of the Clones. And we saw him, Boba, as a youngster picking up the helmet. So I actually, for a moment, thought we were going to get an entire scene on Kamino, which I was actually like, oh, all right, I'm in, I'm in for this. This might be the most exciting thing that I'm going to see here. But that's it's kind of what we got from the episode. And we don't need to go beat by beat. So, you know, Ryan, give me your takeaway.
Okay, so
I mean, keep in mind one thing. I'm trying to, in one way, give this a benefit of the doubt of it's episode one.
It's episode one. Setup. Yeah.
We don't really know what they're going to do with this character and where it's going. And
right.
It had some heavy lift work to do for maybe, you know, there's an audience out there that maybe saw him in The Mandalorian, you know, because I do think part of what is happening with Disney Plus and these streaming series that are being released week by week, they are capturing some more casual fans.
Right.
Maybe not even big Star Wars fans in general, but you just finished Hawkeye. There was a week off for the holidays, and I got to watch something that's new, and Disney Plus hasn't turned me wrong yet, so I'll watch Boba Fett. So they're being a bit broad in that respect, and so I'm trying to give that a little bit of breathing room before I have a full judgment on the series.
Sure, same. And because the biggest question I had coming out of it was like, why?
Yeah.
So, I don't even mean like why make the show. Obviously, I know why they're making the show, but it's like this idea of like, why is Boba Fett so compelled to take Jabba's place to do these things? So, giving the benefit of the doubt that they're going to explore that in the next whatever six or seven episodes, whatever it ends up being, or whatever it's going to be. However, for me to have virtually no idea of that coming out of the pilot, which is what it is, and in a world where, like, I understand it's a pilot with quotes because it's a character that's 40 years old, 40 years old in our time. We'll get into how old he is in real life in a second. But but as something that you said, capturing casual fans, I don't know if it succeeds at that, really. Yeah. Although, my side of Twitter, my little corner of Twitter, it seems that people have been enjoying it, but I feel like it's like if you slap that helmet on anything, a lot of people might be into it, which is fair. You know, times are tough. It's like we need an escape.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not sure I feel like it succeeds as it like an episode of television because.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, it's hard to say that a lot of Disney Plus streaming episodes do succeed as an episode of television. I mean, each of the Marvel shows don't feel like an episode. They feel like a part of a movie.
Right. Yeah. Which is kind of an issue with streaming anyway. But
yeah.
So as someone who's never thought that Boba Fett as a character inherently isn't interesting, right? And that sounds like a pejorative, but it's not. It's like what you said. He's kind of like a force of nature. He's this, like, in the original trilogy, he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
He's just a bad guy.
And he's interesting, like, because you don't know anything else about him.
About him, and he's more like evocative than interesting, where it's just like, oh, like, what's that dude's deal? And that's kind of how he existed for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to be one of these people who says something like this, but I'm about to. The deeper we're going into him, where you know, from the Mandalorian to this, the less, like, mysterious he is, and that makes, like, the draw of what the character is, like, less compelling.
Exactly.
To me. It's like, the more, you know, the way people, I suppose the way people feel about, like, Anakin in the prequels, which is not how I necessarily feel, but where they're like, this is taking, like, this very, like, cool, I wish I had a better word, this very compelling character, and it's making him less compelling by explaining too much. And, well, I'm like,
but you're right. It's actually interesting about Darth Vader. Just saying he's cool would not be a good enough way to describe him. But that's all the way you can describe Boba Fett until now. Was just
right.
He was just cool.
It's like Darth
Vader
was the emotion. The emotional payoff of the entire first original trilogy had to do with Darth Vader. So exploring his interiority makes more sense.
Yeah.
Than kind of reverse engineering a character into being quote unquote interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When it's like, no, that's not like the purpose this character served.
No.
So, yeah, I feel like it's kind of a flawed concept. That doesn't mean that it won't be good. I just didn't think that this first episode from that aspect was very compelling.
Yeah.
And then from an execution aspect, we'll get into as well. Like, I also didn't find it all that compelling.
No, there was even in that fight in the streets of Mos Espa, which
with the shields, where it just went on forever and ever.
Yeah, you know, I didn't mind when Fennec was jumping across the rooftops. I thought that was at least okay. But like, when they were down there in the actual streets, which, by the way, did we think that Jabba was in Mos Espa? I was a little confused by the location and locale. But, I mean, maybe I'm missing some of that. I'm sure they know better than I do when they're creating that.
Sure.
But I actually, the little bit of the choreography there, there's some times where I was like, they're standing in a circle, and there's some times where they're cutting around, and I don't feel like I'm watching Ming-Na Wen just stand there. And I'm like, okay, all right. But, you know, the Gamorrean guards came and saved them, and that was a good setup from earlier. That would they serve him the same way? That was at least nicely done, I thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, there's some elements that were interesting for that, but I think you make a really good point. Is like, do you uncover this shell? Do you unmask him for really what more does it bring? And you reverse engineer. If someone came in with a really good story to tell, that could be something, and maybe we're going to find that. And I feel like we've seen that you have talented writers and talented directors out there who can take any kind of IP and make it interesting and make it compelling. I don't know that episode one of this makes me feel like we're on the path to that.
Right, and I'm not ready to write it off. That scene on the on the street with the shields is kind of like indicative of a lot of things, where it's just like, how many times are we going to watch them like try and like run, like get out of these shields? Like, it was just this thing where it was like they were surrounded. Someone was like, that's like cool.
Yeah.
And then they just kept doing it, like just being like, let me try to
batting away the electrodes.
Yeah, I'll try to like run up them. Then I'll try to like run into them. Then it was just like this thing where it's like, how long is this going to go on?
Yeah.
And then Mike, listen, I don't want to be this person, but I simply must say it. They go through a lot of heavy lifting to explain why Boba Fett, as a person who's supposed to be 40 tops at the oldest, I was like doing it in my head, trying to figure out.
Why is
moving like a 60-year-old man. Now, Temuera Morrison, like, make no mistake, is in amazing shape for a 60-year-old man.
Yeah.
Like, incredible. Truly. However, he is a 60-year-old man in the Boba Fett suit, and the character, instead of them either aging him into that or... And, like, I understand people would freak out at this. You know, like, recasting someone to be, like, a younger Boba Fett. Like, you know, whatever.
It's not like Temuera Morrison was really Boba Fett for that much. You could have cast somebody else.
Right. Well, he was Jango Fett, and he's, like, a clone. I get it. But it's, like, instead of recasting, they kind of were, like, well, he was, like, injured... And he's, like, healing, so he's, like, it's really weird. Like, they explain it away by being, like, he looks old because he, like, has been through a lot. But it's, like, there's a scene, and again, Temuera Morrison is in amazing shape for a 60-year-old man. Or for any person, really. I mean, like, he could beat the hell out of me, I'll tell you that much. But, like, there's a scene where he's, like, running, and I'm, like, yeah, he looks like an old guy running. Yeah. Like, it's, like... And it is distracting because you're like, where in the timeline are we?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Like, they show him in the Sarlacc pit. So they like draw this direct line.
Yeah.
To like, we saw him. We know that, you know, right. He was about, 10 in Attack of the Clones, right?
Yep.
So that puts him when the twins are born at about, 13 or 14?
13, maybe. Yep.
Yeah. So then when... Episode 4 happens, that puts him at, you know, he should be 34. And then I think the first trilogy is supposed to take place over about 5 years. So that makes him like 38,
yeah, you're
39.
Right in the 40s.
So to me, I'm like, okay, if we're like sticking a canon like this, this doesn't quite make any sense.
No. I mean, you're right. Give him some reason. Put him out there in the desert. Have him be... You know, beyond scarred and a back to tank, and maybe he has to go back to the back to tank in every single episode because he's struggling so mightily.
Right.
But you bring up an interesting point. I don't understand why it had to be this. Why, if you're going to put in this time period, is it just, were that many people that big of fans of Temuera Morrison in Attack of the Clones?
I think he's
it's
a
nothing
fine
against
actor,
him. He's fine.
And I'm glad that he's like, I mean, it's cool to like, you know, someone posted on Twitter like to see him and Ming-Na Wen, who are both like, I mean, she's not as old as he is, but they're both like middle-aged people.
Yeah.
Like leading a show. That's cool. But literally from a canon standpoint and from like what this is, whereas like the point, I feel awful saying this, the action scenes where it's supposed to be like, this dude's beating the hell out of everybody. You feel like there was a point where I said, like, this looks a little bit like Steven Seagal, like, fighting people.
Yeah.
Where it's like they're coming at him and he just kind of, like, moves a little. And I'm sure he's not doing all the stunts, too. But it's like they're trying to explain away something that needed
natural
not
aging.
Be explained away. Like, it's like it was just odd. It was just odd.
In the action sequence, the one with the I actually didn't think it was as bad when he's out with the Tusken Raiders and when he takes down whatever the beast was that was basically from Mortal Kombat. which was an interesting choice. Which for a moment I was like, wow, they're going to put in all their CGI budget into this big moment here. And then I actually didn't think the CGI looked that good.
No, but I did really like the monster design, honestly.
Yeah.
That thing of how it stood on two feet. It was like a biped and then a quad pet. Like, I thought that was cool. It was like,
that was definitely cool.
A sand centaur.
But I thought that was okay. My issue was I don't want to see another shot from a low angle upwards at his rage face as he comes down to crush someone's skull.
Right. Like, yeah.
I don't want that anymore.
Sure.
Please. I didn't like it in The Mandalorian where I'm like, I don't want to see the rage of someone absolutely mutilating another person. It just wasn't what I want out of my Star Wars. And then right after that, he just blows someone away on the side of a building. And I think I'd be like, that's totally fine if we're completely all in on him being a bad guy.
Yes.
But we're not. Yeah. We're not.
Which
all
is like, yeah, they're trying to like soften him up.
Yep.
Which is fine. Like, it's like you want to have a hero and they're going to like claim it's like an anti-hero. But it's like they've gone through great lengths to be like, he's ruling Tatooine with respect, not fear. He's like not, you know, it's like there's that that scene with like the mayor's like messenger
attaché or something.
Yeah. And it's like, first off, the humor in that scene, like the banter, like really falls flat.
Dialogue's bad in that too.
Yeah, yeah.
I am Boba Fett. I am the new crime lord. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and like that whole thing of like, I'm a crime lord. He should be paying me. It's like, oh, like I get that this is like funny, you know, but it just falls flat. I just didn't like whatever. But if it's like a thing where we're following this like ruthless bounty hunter, like I'm in for that. Like it's like, you know, it'd be like following the Han Solo we meet at the the Han Solo who shot Greedo first. Like it's like if we're in that world, which they seem so intent on not giving us. Do you know what I mean? Where it's just like all this stuff of like the underworld of Star Wars, and I understand they have to soften it. There's like kids watching and stuff like that. I'm not like I don't want an R-rated thing, but if it's like if it wants to be about this like brutal dude, you know. Granted, they already did that in The Mandalorian. Yeah. So
well, they did all of this in The Mandalorian.
That's another thing is that I'm like, are we still on Tatooine?
Yeah,
you know, like it's like, and I love Tatooine. Don't get me wrong, but but it is just like I was watching it, and I'm sure they want them to feel like you know, sister pieces in a way. Mm-hmm. But it was just this thing where I was like, haven't we like seen this but better?
Yep. And with that in mind, I mean, honestly, I love Ludwig Göransson, and usually I'm not great at parsing music out. In a first watch, I don't know what it is about the way my brain works. I like even watching The Last Jedi, I was like, oh, you know, I like John Williams' score, but it's John Williams. And then I went back and listened to it again. I was like, John Williams' score is incredible in The Last Jedi. Right. But with this, I was like, kind of just feels like we're doing another iteration of The Mandalorian's music. It doesn't seem any different, but maybe I need to listen to it again.
Well, I mean, it's good. Obviously, like he's great.
He's incredible.
He's a great composer, but watching it, like you watch the end credits and they have just like the Mandalorian, they have like the cool, amazingly done, like painted like scenes and stuff like that.
Yep.
And it's Ludwig Göransson's score, and it's just like a little less good.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're just watching it, and I'd say that's kind of like the whole thing is that it's like this is the vibe of the Mandalorian, just like not as good.
You know, I to give a positive though. Casting Matt Berry as a droid, they haven't done enough with him yet, but I absolutely love that casting. I'll take Matt Berry in anything, and I also will say I want that droid to somehow be incredibly inappropriate, and I want him to be, you know, I don't think I can do a Matt Berry impression, but it would be great if he was like, back when Jabba was here, I liked when I saw my Twi'leks in less than anything. I don't know. I can't do it.
Ooh, Mike.
You know, something totally inappropriate, and then he would just be like, Boba! You know, I just want I want Matt Berry.
So, that's very funny.
I shouldn't do Matt Berry impersonation.
I love him.
And that's why I'm like, that casting, and please do something great with him. And they've done that so far with the droids in the past. Richard Ayoade was a droid in Mandalorian.
Taika Waititi, of course.
And Taika was a droid. And then obviously, you know, we think of Phoebe Waller-Bridge in L3. So I mean, they continue to do
Alan Tudyk.
Great,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
droid, and Alan Tudyk, yeah, great droid casting in general. But I find Matt Berry to be absolutely uncontrollably hysterical with most of the things he does. Even aside from when he's overtly sexual in most of his characters. I think he's just incredibly, incredibly funny, and I hope more with that.
Obviously, what we do in the shadows, that's the thing.
Yeah, that's the thing, but it also, character. In the IT crowd, that's the thing as well for his character.
Right. That's so funny. I didn't know that was him.
Else was he in? But yeah, I love that he's in that. Jennifer Beals shows up.
Yes, which I didn't realize until I saw it like later.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, like that's great. Like she's great. And I don't see her in that much anymore. Mm-hmm. Back in the 90s, I saw her in everything, but
she was in a cop series where she was like I can't remember if it was Chicago Code, where she was like actually a chief of police. And I thought she was fantastic. Uh-huh. And I was really disappointed when that was canceled. I think that was her in that or another cop series that she was in. And I was like, oh, this is a good role for her.
She was in this movie called Roger Dodger. Was Jesse Eisenberg's first movie. That's incredible. Highly recommend it. Don't watch it with the kids. This isn't a thing where it's like, after Book of Boba Fett, we'll throw on Roger Dodger. a very like early aughts indie movie where there's like a lot, very dialogue heavy, and it's great. But yeah, it was cool to see her.
It was Chicago Code. She had 13 episodes. It was the season when they canceled it. And actually, it also had Jason Clark, which, I mean, great casting in that.
Yeah, so. He's great. I mean, we must mention the presence of Max Rebo, of course.
Yes, that was a nice little...
For all the Rebo heads.
I think they did a pretty good job.
The Rebo men and women.
The Rebo men and women. They did a pretty good job entering into that establishment, Cantina or whatever they were calling it. It was a new mix on the Cantina theme, wasn't it? They were playing a different version because it was only one of the jizz band Max Rebo. And that was a nice little callback. And I was like, okay, I'll take a winking nod there because it's not essential to the storyline and it didn't really distract. And it was just kind of fun to see him. Cool to see Max.
Yeah, I mean, it's always great to see Max Rebo. I did love in that scene when they hand them their helmets back filled with coins. It's like, wouldn't you be like, now what am I supposed to do with this?
Well, and that was actually the thing when he walked back out and he's like, wait a second, has he cleared the coins because he put his helmet back on for this battle? Because I think you're going to need your helmet. I actually thought Fennec was right. No, I'm never giving my helmet up to anybody. Why would you give your helmet up? That's one of your best tools. And what if someone messes with it? You're going to have a problem doing your actual
duty. And what if someone fills it with like, that's like if you gave someone a hat and they like filled it with peanut butter and you were like, cool, I love peanut butter, but like I need my hat.
I need to wear my hat.
Like, couldn't you give me a bag of peanut butter? The analogy fell apart at the end. But I mean, listen.
By the way, I really love that you listened to my Matt Berry impersonation and didn't even remember who he was at that moment.
Well, no, speaking to your Matt Berry impersonation, I was impressed because it clicked something in my brain that I was like, I know this voice.
Well, good. I'm glad I could at least get there a little bit.
Yeah. And when you said who it was, I was like, yes, of course. That of course is the voice that you were doing. So I don't want to become one of these people that's like every time a Star Wars thing comes out that I have a complaint about it. Granted, that's what they're paying us for. You know what I mean?
They're not holding up their end of the bargain. So
yeah, I mean, it's like, listen, I recently hate listened to a Star Wars podcast that shall go unnamed, but through context clues, people could probably guess what it is, where I was listening to two middle-aged men talk about how Disney and everybody at Disney has no idea what they're doing with Star Wars. I don't agree with that, right? Granted, there's a lot of Star Wars stuff that's come out since the Disney acquisition that I don't like, but there's like more things that I love that have come out. So I'm certainly not like in that camp of where it's like they don't know what they're doing with this thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I think that the Rise of Skywalker was a big misstep. I think that like the handling of the backlash against The Last Jedi was a huge misstep in terms of like their course correcting. I think they should have just stuck to their guns and like let history tell that like The Last Jedi is the most interesting Star Wars movie that's ever been made, and that's just what it is. But so I'm certainly not doing that, but you know, in a world where it's like we'll have more of these series, there's going to be hit or miss, this this wasn't even like built for me to be super interested in it, but I do think that I'm just like, yeah, it feels like super middling. It's not, it feels like, I'm like, this is when the pendulum of fan service is like swung a little too far.
Mm-hmm.
A little too far, like very far, where it's like, now, because you were afraid that if you recast the role, people would freak out because it's like not their Boba Fett.
That I still don't understand. Like, why is that though? Like, it's not like there's a, he was not number one on the call sheet. Timur Morris, he wasn't even, it's in the original
and
trilogy.
And this is nothing, this, I want to make it clear. This has nothing to do with Timur Morris.
No,
like,
I
he is
no
a very
issue
good actor. Like, yeah.
I just don't understand. It's not like in any way when you listed the top 15 to 25 actors in Star Wars from the original trilogy and the prequels, he wouldn't have been in it because he's not in the movies that much.
Right. And also, like, even when they made Solo, they recast Han Solo.
Yeah. So
you know what
you
I
can
mean?
Recast Han Solo.
And I understand that that is not the
didn't
greatest example, but like the problems with that movie had very little to do with the fact that they recast Han Solo. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But that's, again, them trying to take a character who, in a lot of ways, was not on the up and up and not respectful and find ways to make him feel good, that he was inherently good. And, yes, we find that out in the original trilogy through his actions, but we're sort of set up. And I'm a huge Solo defender. I love Solo. I've had a great time watching it over the years. I don't think it's an incredible movie, but I have a lot of fun with it. The aspect of, like, we need to show that he's always been good from the very beginning versus him learning to be good and, you know, finding out he has problems along the way that sends him down a bad path that I guess brings him back to good. I honestly didn't want that. I don't think that every story needs to take these characters that have been on the outer rim of the Star Wars right. universe, or and not necessarily in terms of how prevalent their character is, but like they're not inherently the protagonist with the heart of gold,
right?
And then trying to make them now the protagonist that needs to have the heart of gold.
Well, yeah. So it's like, if you look at, so to me, at their best, these series tend to feel like extended universe stories, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean that in the best way. Like, the extended universe stories have this like inherent excitement. So like, there's more of this world out there. So mm-hmm. it's like most extended universe stories. In my experience, that include Boba Fett, is like, you know, he sat in a ship, the acid rain of the planet was starting to corrode the hull while he waited for the man with the 10 million credit bounty to step outside, like,
yeah.
you know, the bar, like whatever it is, you know, and it's like, that would be great.
What
you
if
what
if they did that as a series of episodes where he's just on different bounties now that he's back? And again, thinking of it with not necessarily the way they've cast this, but just him on individual bounties for 8 episodes, which I think people even talked about with The Mandalorian. What if you just did it
right.
that way,
which is
rather
kind
than
of
having
like,
to have the story?
It's kind of what The Mandalorian was if you didn't introduce Grogu, right? Which
yeah,
is just
exactly.
like
planet to
and
planet,
again,
mission
like,
to mission.
And if you weren't just on sand planets... but like, yeah, like if it's just like Boba Fett gets out of the Sarlacc pit, he's like pissed off. He's, you know, he's got some gears to grind.
Yep.
And you know, he's out there, he's picking up bounties. This isn't like my pitch, but here it is, whatever. You know, he's picking up bounties. He's out for revenge on whomever, you know, like he's out on revenge on Han Solo for accidentally hitting his jetpack with his staff. He's yeah. out, you know, like whatever. And it's like he needs to rebuild because he has no money now. He was in a Sarlacc pit for a long time. Like, you know, he needs to like find his ship. He needs to do like whatever. All of this would have been more compelling to me than him being like I'm the new Jabba.
Yeah.
And like I'm actually like not a bad guy.
I'm going to make things better for everybody.
Yeah, like, again, I hope that they answer these things. I strangely, like, don't have confidence that they will, just because they've given no indication that they're going to. But,
yeah.
like, the idea that they're going to give us a compelling reason why he's like, I need to fix, like, the crime syndicates on Tatooine
mm-hmm.
is just what, like, why would he want to do that? I understand he worked for Jabba for a long time.
This is a totally new character who is doing, you know, his own thing that none of it was actually relevant to what came before. But that's okay, because what came before wasn't actually much at all. So
yeah, like, that's the other thing, is that we have to admit that it's like that. Well, I mean, like, how can we say this isn't consistent with a character? There was really no character there.
There was no character.
Aside from the fact, you know, obviously, like, he witnessed his father be decapitated by Mace Windu.
True. I guess we're thinking of the original trilogy versus the prequel, but yeah.
And he seems like very, you know, by the flashbacks, he seems very haunted by that. Who would not be, you know?
Who would not be?
And he is like a clone from Kamino, and that's interesting.
Which, and if they explore that, that could be interesting. I actually think your point,
if only they had done like a really interesting, intricate exploration of what it is to be a clone during those times.
If only. But you make an interesting point. It's like, I actually think it would not be surprising that he would want to be seeking out revenge on Han Solo, and who probably still has some bounties out on him, even though Jabba's no longer around. Or the fact that he wants to chase down the Jedi because Luke Skywalker and himself was also sort of responsible, which we don't really want this series to, again, cross over with the Skywalkers. There was a moment where I lost my thought process in the timeline, and when they were out in the desert and they snuck up on that sand dune and were overlooking what was presumably a moisture farm.
You thought it was Uncle Owen, right?
Yeah, I thought it was Uncle Owen. I was like, same. What's going on here? And then because I was like, oh, wait a second. No, this is after Return of the Jedi. I was like, what? So I got confused for the timing, because they are jumping timelines. So.
Yeah, I had the same exact thought, though. And then I had to like resituate myself. Did you think for a second that they were going to have this reveal where like a Tusken Raider was going to take off their mask and they were just like humans?
For a second, yeah, I did.
And
especially
I got real fanboyish for a second where I was like, they better not. Like, I was like, I'm afraid they're going to like imply that like Tusken Raiders are like humans under those things. And like, that would do so much retconning. I wasn't prepared to like deal with the headcanon anymore.
Yeah. I'm glad they did not do that. And I think, it seems like they're going to stick with that, because we're still on Tatooine. So we're probably not done with Tusken Raiders. Let's be honest.
No. Yeah. There's going to. Well, and you know what? Like, as always, it's fun to hear the sounds. Like, he dropped his helmet for full of coins, and the Jawas picked it up. And you know, I love a Jawa. Yeah.
Who doesn't? But I did. It was funny just to kind of think about that with the Raiders. Is like, what about them and their sign language that they used in The Mandalorian? Is that not how they communicate, or that's how they communicate with others who are not their own people? I don't know. Interesting. It was kind of cool that they did that in The Mandalorian.
How, at the end, does it say created by Jon Favreau at the end?
It does. It says directed by Robert Rodriguez is the first credit. Second credit is written by Jon Favreau, which, intriguing, did not realize he was writing this series. Third is created by Jon Favreau. Fourth is based on George Lucas's Star Wars.
How do you even claim that this was...
How do you have the stones?
Yeah, like, it's not even... Like, The Mandalorian, at least, it's like a new character.
Yeah.
You know, that's so weird.
Well, as we talked about, this is basically a new character.
Yeah, but it's like, not. No, you know what not. I mean?
It's, yeah. Well, you're right, because we are continuing to just see badass moments is all they're about. It's just like, how often can we have him smash?
But and to me, it's like, it doesn't even follow through on that, because I'm like, he's not like,
yeah, you're right, because what we talk about. Yeah, no, I agree. It feels like
I'm not being ageist, if they wanted to make a show about a 60-year-old bounty hunter, that's fine. I'm just saying that it's like, that's not how old this character is,
and that's not what they're trying to do.
Yeah, they're trying to, like, yeah.
But it feels like a little bit like, you know, Jon Favreau and Robert Rodriguez playing out their fantasies of if they could be a bounty hunter now at their times in their lives when they're, what, mid-40s, 50s?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, this is what I could do versus what.
It's like if Kingdom and the Crystal Skull came out and, like, and at a point Indiana Jones was like, man, like, I'm starting to feel it. This is 40. You know what I mean? And you were like, that man's not 40. And I understand that Boba Fett doesn't say how old he is, but that's how old he's supposed to be. It's like, at least like with something like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, they were acknowledging that it's like time has passed.
Yep.
And like, this is like, how stupid do you think we are?
Well, they must feel like they can get away with it.
That being said, like, Temuera Morrison has the scene where he gets out of a back-to-tank, and you know I love seeing a back-to-tank. You know how I feel about that. I love a back-to-tank. He gets out of the back-to-tank, and you say, man, oh, man, that guy's in great shape. He really
is. He looked like he was in great shape. And as you talked about, continue to applaud the diversity in the casting.
Of course.
You know, the diversity across all the Star Wars series, because Pedro Pascal is the lead in The Mandalorian. Right. You know, you've got Ming-Na Wen and now Temuera Morrison. It's pretty impressive that they continue to go with non-traditional leads, and that's fantastic.
It's great. And, like, I'm not saying that, like, when I say that they, like, recasting should have been in line, I obviously mean, like, an appropriate recasting. Oh, yeah. I'm not saying, like, why didn't they get Ryan Reynolds? You know, or, like, something like that. Like, an appropriate recasting, like, should have at least been, maybe it was considered. Or, like, or DH him. I don't care. But, yeah, obviously, like, we're not, like, and, I, you know, you may not feel that it should have been recast in terms of age. But, like, obviously, if that's the line they went, we want them to cast an appropriate actor according to, like, you know, the characteristics of Jango and Boba Fett. But I just found it like so distracting, like truly distracting.
Yeah. That was, I inappropriately said after his appearance in The Mandalorian, I think he's in better shape now than he was in The Mandalorian, that I was like, oh, I'm not really enjoying seeing an out of shape Boba Fett. And that was not very cool of me. And you called me for it, Ryan, and I appreciate that. But now I do think he's in better shape, and it's more about the age isn't quite right for trying to do the action that they're trying to do, as you said.
Yeah, because not even with the action, it recontextualizes the character in this weird way where it like makes him more. I understand that like Boba Fett's supposed to be this like very experienced weathered bounty hunter, but it like it makes him, instead of someone like full of, excuse the parlance, like piss and vinegar, being like it's more of like, it makes it more of a like Dark Knight Returns. Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, where it's supposed to be like an older bounty hunter who's entering the third act of their life, where it should be like a experienced bounty hunter who's like, this is like how I'm going to define myself.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it really like throws the skew off of the entire universe that way, if they want to have it interact with other parts of the universe, which inevitably they will. That it's kind of like, oh, okay, like they want to have their cake and eat it too, like make this after everything, like you could make him this old and just make it like later.
Yeah,
it just like doesn't match up with where the universe is.
Well, it they have to shoehorn it in, because you know this is going to tie in with other IP or other properties within Star Wars for the moment that we get back-to-back Boba Fett and the Mandalorian fighting together. Right. I mean, we kind of got that already.
Yeah, we'll
get like a bigger, you know, team up, because team ups is basically what we're building to. Right.
Right.
We've essentially already seen a team up between Ahsoka and the Mandalorian, Boba Fett and the Mandalorian. You know, what other characters we might see as they grow out the other series? Lando, like, put them all together. They're going to have their Avengers moment. It's probably happening. Where do you think this is going? And I'll start with, I don't think we've learned a whole lot more than we did with the promos. We're still kind of in the same spot that we were.
Right, right.
My guess is the mayor character is going to have some tie-in to some other syndicate that we're aware of, you know, from other Star Wars, whether it be, as Chris loves, Conja Club, Irving Boys, whatever other group is out there, or Crimson Dawn, which I think I saw was a theory already, could be Crimson Dawn from Solo. I think that's where we'll see a little bit of the stretch into other characters that we're aware of, because the formula is clearly what they're following is the Marvel formula, because we saw that with the addition of Luke at the end of Mandalorian season 2 and all of the other guest appearances essentially in Mandalorian season 2, that this is going to just continue to tie into the rest of Star Wars, Maybe we get a crossover with Harrison Dula for an episode. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just, like, we're going to start building into how this connects into the larger canon.
So what I would love to see, and this is another thing that the age thing is going to screw up a little.
Yeah.
Is that, like he should, like, if we're doing this, right, if we're going to do this thing where everything ties in.
We're doing it.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
Like, can he meet Rex?
Yeah.
Like, but then do they age him up?
But what would be the point? I mean, it would almost be like he should just meet any clone. It doesn't even have to. I guess Rex would be fine.
Well, Rex is just like, becomes like the main guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, that wouldn't, like now how do they, in the Ahsoka series, where they could have had Temuera Morrison be Rex.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are they going to do that now? Because the timeline's the same and he's as old as Rex would be.
Yeah.
Right? But it's like, but now he's supposed to be 20 years younger too.
So what we're saying is Lucasfilm is putting a lot of credits in a helmet of someone who maybe shouldn't be the lead linchpin of everything they're trying to do.
Right. I mean, maybe it won't. And,
it may not be.
I don't, like, I'm not trying, again. I'm not being
this is
ageist.
Not a negative Temuera Morrison podcast.
No, not at all. Saying. I think he's like very compelling. You know, like he's yeah. Like, and I'm glad that he's like having this moment and stuff. I literally wish that they had just been like, you know, this is, you know, he gets out of the Sarlacc pit and then it says 20 years later and we're like, all right, well, everything happened.
Yep.
And now we're in sequel trilogy territory.
Which I would have preferred, again, like we thought about, maybe this was Book of Boba Fett, a bunch of stories about Boba Fett when he was younger, told by older Temuera Morrison.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
You know, flashbacks, and we're getting
and
flashbacks.
He has the helmet on all the time. You don't have to worry about it.
You didn't have to do anything with it. That would have been fine.
Right. He does the voice. Great.
Yeah.
And then, like, they flash forward to Tatooine where he's sitting on the throne and he's telling stories, framing device, whatever. It's like the Princess Bride.
Exactly. Yeah. That would have been perfect. Before we wrap up, I do... One of the things I've seen is the early reactions is people giving a lot of credit to Patton Oswalt for his Parks and Rec thing where, look, yes, that is accurate to what they did. However, that was hardly the most interesting idea that Patton Oswalt did in that bit.
Right. I believe Thanos was involved in that bit.
Yeah, Thanos was involved in that. But also the idea of like robot Chewbacca. And I know he was trying to be funny. But the idea of thinking about the character of Boba Fett and how you bring them back... The first place you have to start is his hand coming out of the sand. That's just what would happen. It's not an amazing prediction. I love Patton Oswalt.
Mm-hmm.
That is not something to be like, wow, he called it. That's what has to happen.
Right.
You can't do a story unless he crawled out of the Sarlacc pit. It just isn't possible.
Also, I think Patton Oswalt is probably referencing some extended universe stuff. Like we,
yeah,
you know, so. Man. We're making enemies today.
Well, you know, the internet is very easily amused.
Yes.
And easily angered. So, you know, send us your anger. Send us your
any engagement.
Scum and villainy. Yeah. Any engagement, just send it our way.
Yeah.
Did we miss anything? I think that was pretty much it. You know, the young Tusken Raider developing a bond in some way, coming back with the head of the creature, that was fun.
Yeah, it was cute.
The why am I forgetting the name of the species of Greedo that was next to him?
I also don't know, but
him selling him out, that was interesting.
That guy narking him out.
Yeah, that was good. What did you think of the volume? And there were moments where I was
my God.
Why are you trying to go on a wide shot when it looks like they're clearly there just
was
in
this
10
specifically
feet of sand?
A scene at night where he's fighting. Was it the Tusken Raiders? He's trying to escape and he's fighting the one with the staff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That I was like, whoa.
Yep. It looks like a soundstage, even though it's not a soundstage.
Well, it was just flat. It was just like weird.
Yeah. it was totally flat. I mean, but then the first shot where they're going through Jabba's palace, I'm like, okay, there's a weird fisheye thing happening now. And I think that's because that's just the volume and not an actual set.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There'll be a lot of that.
I do feel like there's going to be a lot in the volume that like they'll continue to develop and improve and get better. And,
yeah, of course.
You know, a wind fan for one would be helpful just to have sand blowing around a little bit.
Yeah, and just they to had give that it one scene motion. Where
his hand was moving. But yeah,
I guess when Jon Favreau invented the volume, he didn't think of that.
I guess when Jon Favreau invented Star Wars and right. every character in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Jesus. Did you expect he'd be writing? I mean, I hope he's not. I didn't know. More I was than surprised. One episode.
I was surprised.
I mean, I assumed Dave Filoni would be writing
by
an episode.
Robert Rodriguez, based as on did the
I.
Dialogue.
I essentially thought it was going to be written by Rodriguez, but I wonder if this was the deal. Like Rodriguez will come in and direct everything if it's written by somebody else.
Maybe. Who knows?
Who's actually writing it too? I mean, is Favreau really writing every script, or does he have a team of 8 people and he just takes the credit?
It seems like he's probably writing it and not doing any rewrites.
With this, the dialogue, that seems to be the case.
And he rips the last page out of the typewriter and says, "Shoot it."
I mean, if he's looking, he's like, "Look, George didn't spend his time on dialogue either, so I'm not spending my time on
it." Yeah, it's just this is more in line. When I was on Rudy, yeah.
Oh boy, let's get back into Rudy, the Rudy pod. I'm all about it. Still my favorite Jon Favreau role or appearance or anything.
There you go.
Well, I think that's going to do it. We'll be back for episode 2. Excited to find more things to be hopeful about after episode 1. I mean, you know, it's still Star Wars. It's still fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I there are moments, though, where I'm like, well, this is not really what I want from my Star Wars, but hey, we're here.
Better than nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it gets me talking to find people like you each week, Ryan. Yeah. That's really what I'm here
Great
for.
Great to talk.
Well, that will do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. We'll be back next week, and we'll hopefully have a few more droids to join us as well. That'll do it. What they throw?
Annie? Hopple Arnold? Hopple Neural Arnold?
Anybody know where Max Rebo's playing tonight?
Yeah, I want to see like an Eyes Wide Shut. I want to see an Eyes Wide Shut where like, he runs into Max Rebo and he's like, "I'm playing somewhere tonight. There's, you know, Fidel. The password is Fidelio."